Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano. Coming up on Inside Coverage, the Steelers beat the Dolphins on Monday night. But do we believe any more in the Steelers today than we did Monday morning? Did the Patriots need to lose to the Bills? Is there a silver lining? Jori Epstein was there. She has that story. Frank Schwab has the guaranteed playoff projections. And one half of the Legion of Boom joins the show. Richard Sherman. Cam Chancellor. Inside coverage coming up next. It's beginning to feel a lot like another edition of Inside Coverage. I know. Thank you for being here, friends. My name is Andrew Siciliano. I will answer your question now. No, I have not done any shopping. And I know the other question that you wanted to know. Andrew, did you somehow rally and win in the fantasy playoffs last night? Because that was such a good game. It was such a good game. Coming up, we're going to talk to Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor, by the way, one half of the Legion of Boom. We'll preview the big Thursday night football game, best Thursday night game of the year, coming up in the NFC West in Seattle on Thursday, go figure, hence the name Thursday Night Football. But I know Jori Epstein, Frank Schwab, also blowing up my phone earlier today, wanting to know, Andrew, did you get 55 points from DK Metcalf last night to rally and win? And the answer is no, I did not. No, I did not. However, it did make that game watchable. Not really. And Frank, if I had only started Kirk Cousins and Darren Waller, I would have won.
Oh, really? Wow. That is, I was waiting on Jaylen Warren. He did nothing for me. I was rooting for, as I tweeted at you, I was rooting for the 371-yard touchdown by DK Metcalf at the end that you needed. You were that close. All you needed was that. So disappointing loss for you, Andrew. I'm sorry.
Oh, yes. The clowns, the no-talent three-letter word clowns, have been eliminated from the fantasy playoffs. Jori, all I needed were like three of those 85-yard DK Metcalf touchdowns we saw in Dublin, and I would have been okay. Or have faith in Kirk Cousins on TNF last week.
I'm shocked you didn't get that, Andrew, but as Aaron Rodgers said, many of the guys who performed on Monday night were the cast-offs of the teams that
not him,
he
though.
Didn't forget about. Yes, I did love that our friend at the program, Brooke Pryor, was like, do you consider yourself a cast-off? And he was like,
she is.
I do not.
He is a cast-off. The Jets were
apparently
like,
I have been cast-off twice
by previous teams. Is.
He it doesn't identify me. As a cast-off.
He should have is he owned it. He could have been though. A dude, and that he was trying to be.
I know.
Like he was trying for a second to be like, I'm one of the guys. I'm talking about all these cast offs. We're just a bunch of ragtags. And then Brooke asks, are you a cast off? He's like, oh, God, no, I'm not one of those guys. Gosh. Like it was a perfect opportunity for him to just be like, yeah, I felt, you know, disrespect, whatever he wanted to say. But he was like, no, I'm not down there. Like, don't confuse that. Just Aaron being Aaron, I guess, at the end of the day.
I was a little surprised because in his like on-field interview with Lisa Salters, when he starts talking about cast-offs, and it came up because I think it was Rasul Douglas who came up to say hello to him in the middle of the interview, and he was talking about what Rasul did for the Packers team and how that team had cast-offs and this team has cast-offs. And so when Brooke asked that, I was like, oh, yeah, he's going to be able to, like you said, have that rallying force of we were doubted and look how we are now and look how old I am and look where you were cut and look what the Jets didn't want me and Aaron Glenn and put your hand to the ear as you did week one for the cat calls and boo birds. And yes, not a cast.
Just not in him. Just not.
Or
in
he can't, he could have turned it into a Pittsburgh and Iron City thing. He could have said he's cast iron. You see, could have been a marketing thing.
I'm
disappointed.
I'm not selling that one, sorry.
Okay. When he did his thing with John Sutcliffe,
thank you so much ESPN, for trying though.
I tried. John Sutcliffe, the ESPN Deportes guy who was out there, and he always does the half English, half Spanish interviews. And Aaron's like, no, I understand you, because John was asking the questions in Spanish and then translating them. Aaron's like, no, I get it. And you could see the look on his face. Aaron is truly getting it. But Aaron, you can answer the question in Spanish.
Like, pretty cool.
I wanted to hear him try to answer the question in Spanish. That was my disappointment of the night. No? The fact that Asante Samuel Jr., how are you not flagged for hugging Darren Waller in the end zone on the touchdown? I mean, he is behind him. It looked right out of Titanic. He's got his arms around him, pulling him down to the ground. And Darren Waller, of course, not in any way Jerry, have you ever seen a 5'9" corner behind him? Caught the ball easily, like it was a little kid on the turkey bowl in the backyard. How do they not flag that? Anybody?
Jerry, have you seen Titanic? Have you seen it?
No comment. As Mike Tomlin said about T.J. Watt, I have no update at this time.
Yeah.
Nothing to share.
Jerry, have you not seen Titanic either? Jerry, I haven't seen any movies. Have you not seen it?
She does not a movie person, even in the slightest.
I don't do movies.
Ever?
Not even Titanic.
I don't know the last movie I watched.
You've seen a movie before. The concept of cinema is something that you understand.
Yes, but I couldn't tell you when I last watched it and which one it was. Probably something my brothers and dad were watching when I was home.
Like, have you seen Home Alone?
Okay, I did see those. When I was little, I watched TV, and so I have seen Home Alone.
That's how we cracked the code? That was the answer key?
The kids' movies, like Little Rascals, Little Giants, Home Alone. Like, I'm doing quite well there, although not the Disney movies. Okay. But then once you get to, like, anything past, like, 2007, I should say past middle school for me, I stopped watching TV and movies.
So do you not have the attention span to sit there to watch for 2 hours?
Yeah, I just have, like, so many other things I'd rather do.
Like read a good book. I'm with you. I'd rather read a good book.
Read a book, the book is go always for a run, see friends and family.
Yes.
I could do something. I can't,
but I've still seen movies. Although I have never seen Titanic. And many years ago, I said this on NFL Network.
God, it's really good.
The boat sinks. The boat sinks.
I know that.
I know how it ends. It hit an iceberg. They die.
Spoiler alert here, Andrew. Come on. Some of us don't know this.
Years ago, I said this on NFL Network. And somebody had the same reaction. What was the studio, Universal, Warner Brothers, whatever the studio was, they overnighted the Titanic DVD to the network and dropped it on my desk the next morning. Full disclosure, I haven't opened the DVD yet.
Oh, that's a good movie. You should check it out. So, try it out.
Anyway.
So we've been out for like 25 years. You know.
Yeah, I know. Whatever. So here's the deal. The Steelers won. They dominated. The Dolphins, Troy Aikman questioned whether or not the Dolphins were even trying in the second half. Like, why aren't you going hurry up? Why are you huddling? There's no urgency here. They finally went hurry up after they got in the end zone once. Troy Aikman was kind of like laughing at it, almost like, hey, good. Don't go hurry up. I can go home faster. Although he didn't actually say that. The Dolphins were officially...
No, he actually was like, should I sing a song because we're not doing anything in this game? And I'm like, why is that your natural response?
I was here for it.
Shall I entertain you with a vaudeville routine? So the Steelers scored a touchdown on four straight drives. Anyway, you turn on the coverage today. And by the way, the Steelers have turned it around. I mean, we declared them dead a couple of weeks ago. So good for them. And I truly do mean that, snark aside. But you turn on the coverage last night and today, it's, oh my God, here come the Steelers. Look out. Guys, they beat a Dolphins team that for all intents and purposes quit against the Browns a month ago. Now, to their credit, the Dolphins also have come back and they had a nice little four-game winning streak. But, Frank, do you feel any more confident about the Steelers today than you did a day ago?
A little bit, just because now they're closer to winning the division. And, you're getting to a point where they're going to the playoffs. Look, there's something to be said about that. But as far as like getting into the playoffs and doing anything, it's still really hard to see the path there. Though, I will say like Aaron Rodgers is having kind of an awesome season nobody wants to talk about. We spent more time talking about Phillip Rivers last week than we have spent talking about Aaron Rodgers all season. Like he is doing something at age 42, and unless your name is Tom Brady, has never been done before. The best passer rating for anybody not named Tom Brady at Aaron Rodgers' age was 76.6 over a season, minimum 100 attempts. That was Warren Moon. No other quarterback at 42 or older has been better than 76.6. Aaron Rodgers is, I think, approaching 100. Now I get other advanced stats, say he's not that good and all that kind of stuff. I get it. He's not like setting the world on fire and you're not going to get any MVP votes, but what Aaron Rodgers is doing is pretty good. And I guess could there be a one more moment for the master type of moment in the playoffs where he has one great game and they win a game? I think it'd be a pretty awesome story. But no, to your point, Andrew, not much confidence in the Steelers. I still think when we get to the 14 teams, if we could project them out, which I do every Wednesday, by the way, at Yahoo Sports.
That's coming
up
soon.
If we get to the 14 teams, I can tell you that 13 of them have a chance to win a Super Bowl and the Steelers don't.
It's super interesting because when you look at how they were able to make the Dolphins one-dimensional on offense and say, okay, Tua, fine, beat us. And that just really didn't work for Miami. I'm kind of like, huh, well, does Pittsburgh's defense have something that we weren't seeing at the beginning of this year? We also certainly weren't seeing their five-game losing streak to end last year. And, like, historically, when the Steelers have been able to win, they've been good on defense. The problem is that, like, they were kind of relying on the rushing game themselves. And the only other two times they've had more rushing yards this season were losses. So I'm curious, like, is that actually a sustainable formula? I agree that the Steelers' wins as a whole, and I mean, if this was college football playoffs, we shouldn't be that impressed. The only team they beat that is currently on track to go to the playoffs is the Patriots. So their wins have not been particularly impressive. But as we talked about with the Bears earlier this year, and as we talked about with the Commanders last year, 10 of the 12 Commanders' wins were against teams that did not make it to the playoffs and I believe had losing records last year. And so they still made it to the NFC Championship. I don't think this is a long-term fix. I think it's a short-term one. What also is a little bit crazy just on the trend standpoint is that if you look at Tua, and I know we're going to get there, but it's like, okay, you kind of be like, well, Tua's numbers last night were not actually that bad. 253 yards, 22 of, I think it's 29. The Dolphins' top five passing yardage games all year were losses. And so I think there's something to say about maybe the Steelers don't have all the pieces, but what they were able to do without TJ Watt, by the way, who hopefully they can get him back from his lung injury, I think they said, we understand the other team. We understand what their weakness is. It's that if we make them pass and try and win that way, they're not going to do it. And so we're going to carry out that game plan. And it worked. So I think that you have to give them some credit for kind of winning the mind game, even if you might have questions about their ability to consistently win the talent game.
Yeah. And let's say this too, and you're right, we will get to Tua coming up in a second. When it comes to the Steelers, is it a guarantee they're going to win the division? No, it is not. But as it stands now, they are 8-6 and the Ravens are 7-7 and they play again week 18. Steelers have already beaten the Ravens once. The Steelers can lose their next two games, but all they have to do is beat the Ravens week 18. It doesn't matter at this point. The Steelers, who get the Lions and the Browns, can rest everybody if they so chose and then just beat the Ravens week 18 and win the division. It's laid out like that. Dumb matter. Now, you'd be putting a lot into that week 18 game. I'm sure NBC would love it for game 272, but the Steelers are truly in the driver's seat. If they lose the next two and then beat the Ravens week 18, they'd have the same record, but the Steelers would get them on the first tiebreaker divisional record. It would be over, and that is it. So now for the Dolphins. I think Tua is getting benched, and I think Mike McDaniel all but told us that today. He said he hasn't made up his mind who is going to start this coming Sunday. He said the quarterback play was not good enough on Monday night. All things are being considered, and he was asked 10, 12, I mean, he was asked 100 different ways, you know, do you want Quinn Ewers? Would it be valuable to see Quinn Ewers? Would you rather see Zach Wilson? If you bench Tua, does that mean he's not going to be the guy in 2026? He didn't want to go there. He didn't really want to answer any of those questions. But, Jory, when you have a coach say, I'll tell you tomorrow who's going to be the starting quarterback, and yesterday wasn't good enough, and you're officially eliminated from the postseason, and you have a $54 million cap number the next year, this sounds like they're putting Tua in bubble wrap.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that when you look at the fact that the Dolphins already fired their general manager, Chris Greer, this season, and I think a part of that is he extended Tua Tagovailoa and it hasn't worked out great for the team. They haven't had all the pieces together to really make that move while they were paying the quarterback. And so now if you're Mike McDaniel and you're saying, it's not even necessarily that, again, as I said on Monday night, like Tua's stats were fine on Monday night. They didn't win the game, but they weren't like he couldn't complete a pass or find the end zone or anything like that. I think this is more a question of what do we need to see? And am I going to lose my job if I do what the last guy did who lost his job? Obviously, GM and head coach not being the exact same positions. I think that once you start doubting the starting quarterback, it's kind of game over. It's not like that necessarily for your third receiver or your defensive tackle. I mean, you can cycle those guys through and it not have a huge impact on the psyche of the locker room and the player at the position, even if it's not their preference. But the quarterback is the leader of a team in a different way. And once you as the coach start questioning or not obviously asserting that person's authority, there starts to creep doubt into the locker room and it can have an effect. So I think we should definitely assume that a change is going to be made.
Yeah, I mean, I assume the same, too. I mean, you could just watch Tua, and he's a shell of himself. This isn't a guy who's had a bad career. He led the NFL in passer rating 1 year. The next year he came back, led the NFL in yards passing. He has been a good quarterback. And I always fought back at the people who just want to take shots at him all the time. I never said he's Patrick Mahomes, but he was a productive quarterback early in his career. And I always hate to bring this up because it seems so cold and unfeeling, but he has not been the same quarterback since that concussion he suffered against Buffalo last season. He just hasn't. If you look at his playing style, if you look at the numbers, you look at the production, he became a different quarterback. And I hate that that's the case for Tua, but it's true. He over the last two seasons, he just hasn't been that guy. Even when the Dolphins kind of made their rally from a really, really terrible start to the season, they did it basically telling Tua just be a game manager. I mean, in the four games leading up to Monday night, I don't think he had thrown more than 21 passes in a game. I know he had not had more than 173 passing yards in a game, and they won all those games because they basically just turned him into, hey, hand it off or get it to Devon Achane out in space. That's all we need you to do. And then even last night, all the stats were in the fourth quarter when the game was done. For the first three quarters, I believe he had 85 yards. He had one completion to a receiver. That was 10 yards to Jalen Waddle. The interception he threw early in the game was just awful. He's just, it's just not there anymore. And I don't know if on the Dolphins, if I just say, well, maybe next year. I just think they're to the end with him. They just know that this isn't coming back. It's not going to get better. Let's keep it, as Andrew said, let's keep him on bubble wrap to make sure, you know, injury guarantees and whatnot. And also, maybe let's look at Zach Wilson for the last three games. Let's see Quinn Ewers for the last three games, because I think they've just reached a point. And you can see it in their play calling. You can see it in their philosophy. As you pointed out, Andrew, his five best passing games all this year were all losses. They're not winning with him passing the ball anymore. And I think they finally have gotten to a point of, hey, this is just done. We got to go in a different direction now. And that stinks, because Tua's a likable guy. He's a guy you do root for. But yeah. You look at the results. It just, again, since that concussion last year, week two against Buffalo, it was in Miami, it just hasn't been there for him.
The math is this, and this is all from SpoTrack, and there are different ways to massage some of these cap numbers, but as it stands now, Tua is guaranteed one way or the other. Somebody's writing the check. $54 million guaranteed. His cap hit for 2026 right now is 56.4. However, that assumes that there's a $15 million option bonus, which would be exercised this coming March. If that doesn't happen, that $15 million reverts back to base salary. That would raise his cap number to 68.4. Either way, we're looking at $99 million on the dead cap for Tua. So if this is it, and there's a chance that last night was his last game as a Dolphin. Sounds extreme, but you got to wrap your head around that. If that's the case, $99 million in dead cap, and the Dolphins have to figure out, we don't know who the GM is, honestly don't know who the coach is going to be either. Don't let the four-game winning streak here, you know, confuse you into thinking that Mike McDaniel's a lock for next year. He isn't. They got to figure out, much like the Broncos and Russell Wilson, how do we do this? Do we eat it all now? Do we spread it out? But if we're going to move on, we got to do this now. All right. Hey, Jory, you wrote yesterday about the Patriots and the Bills, and you're at that game where the Bills got even with the Patriots, and they're 1-1 now, and it's now only a one-game lead, New England over Buffalo in the AFC East. You use the words humble pie. Talked a lot about Mike Vrabel's demeanor in the locker room and how he dealt with his players after the team. Is there a world in which that result Sunday, blowing a 21-point lead at home with the possibility of ending the Bills' five-year reign atop the division, was a good thing?
Yeah, I think it was. And I think if your goal was just try at all costs to get the number one seed in the bye, then yeah, clearly this is a step back. They could have had hats and shirts. They did not get their hats and shirts in not only losing to the Bills, but like you said, blowing that 21-point lead. And the way they lost was not ideal, but the idea of having a loss generally and what it exposes about a team after 10 straight wins, I do think will help them become more of a playoff-ready team. And it wasn't just me who thought that. As we were in the locker room in the postgame, I mean, it's Stefon Diggs who's saying, look, this is good for us. We needed this. We need what we can learn from it. And he was the one using those words of humble pie. And I thought that was really interesting coming from a player and Stefon who has played in the NFC Championship with the Vikings, the AFC Championship with the Bills, but not gone to the Super Bowl. So he knows what it takes to actually get over that hump, or more so he's seen how you cannot get over the hump in the playoffs when you feel like you're riding high. And then another player I talked to is cornerback Carlton Davis, who was on the Buccaneers Super Bowl team the year Tom Brady won it with them. And he's similar. It's like, this is a playoff game. The Patriots haven't had a lot of this kind of caliber game experience in the last few years. So as an organization, you need this. And I think these messages were really coming from Mike Vrabel top down, who we've seen on videos throughout this year after the wins, Mike Vrabel hugging his players and congratulating them and standing in the tunnel outside the entrance to the locker room after the game. But you give coaches even more credit when it's, he's not just doing this after wins, after this loss, after they'd blown what they felt like was a game that they seemed not only to be headed toward winning, but also to be helping Drake May's MVP campaign. And then they blew it by 4 points. And you have Mike Vrabel standing there. He's still giving guys knuckles. He's still dapping them up. And when he has one player walk by and his head's hanging, he's like, hey, this is the National Football League, which is to say this happened. So all of this is that maybe in the short term, you don't want to not be able to finish a game like this, and you don't want to have some of the issues they had, particularly in the third quarter going into the fourth when it's an interception, then they let them drive 91 yards to go, they let them convert on fourth down. But you do need some of these things exposed if you want to be able to be ready to respond when others expose them in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that's, it's all very well put. And also, they lost to Superman. Like, Josh Allen just did his superhero thing and just carried them to a win. And sometimes that's going to happen when you got a quarterback like that you're going against. And I look at it this way. The Patriots are 10-1 in their last 11 games. Let's not do this whole 18-1 game season type of thing with the Patriots today. The Patriots are a very, very good team that happened to lose a football game. But I will say this, like, in terms of, you know, refocusing, figuring out what you got to work on, a young team getting dealt a loss like this, that's all well and good. But all of a sudden, the math starts getting a little hard, too, because, A, you have not clinched the AFC East. There's a projection model out there that has Buffalo at like 37% to win a division now. That's not insignificant. You got about a one-third chance for Buffalo to come track you down. That's not great. And also, I think they have lost a chance to get the number one seed in the AFC. Not lost it, but I think they're in an uphill climb now where they were the front runners before. And you do not want to come to Denver in January to face that defense in the altitude. So I just think the loss was crushing on that level where they couldn't afford it necessarily in terms of just the standings. But as far as just refocusing, getting back to what they have to do and kind of learning a lesson from it. Yeah, I think that was all well and good for the Patriots. This wasn't some embarrassing loss for them, even though they blew a 21-zip lead. It's just like, you lost to a capable Bills team that has a guy who I personally think right now is the MVP. It just happens sometimes. Like you said, it's the NFL. Like, that sometimes you lose games and every other team's losing game. Why not the Patriots?
Yeah, exactly. And the Patriots still have a clinching scenario this week, but it's not for the division. It is for making the playoffs. The Patriots visit Baltimore on Sunday Night Football on NBC. The Patriots are in with a win or with a Houston loss earlier in the day. If neither of those happen, they could be in with a Colts loss. The Colts play Monday night at home against the 49ers. As for the Bills, they need a win and an Indy loss or a Houston loss to clinch a playoff spot this week. The Bills are in Cleveland to face the Browns. I will be there for that one. I was getting ready for today. First dive into Buffalo's side of things. It blows me away how many guys are out. I mean, you know it. And we've talked about it every day and every week. But when you actually start putting your boards together and start crossing off names, you're like, wow. They didn't have a kicker until about 20 minutes ago and they signed Michael Badgley because Prater and Bass are both out. And they're going to have to sign a kicker this week to kick on Sunday. Michael Badgley, the Money Badger, come on down. And also come on down, Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor, one half of the Legion of Boom, set to join Inside Coverage coming up next. This is kind of great here on Inside Coverage. We have the Legion of Boom, at least two guys from the Legion of Boom here, as they're here together. Cam Chancellor and Richard Sherman combined, what, like 9 or 10 Pro Bowls, Super Bowl champions. One of them's on TV. The other one's a restaurateur. Actually, guys are both kind of restaurateurs together here because they were playing Ready or Not and doing some SWAT training. We'll get to that in a second. Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor, gentlemen, good to see you both.
Great to see you too, man.
Yeah, good to see you as well.
So, how would you have reacted, Sherm, you go first, if you guys had lost to a 44-year-old Philip Rivers?
A lot of concern. But it's this old guard, you know what I mean? It's the old guard of quarterbacks. It's the old guard. They can still play, and they can play at a different level than the younger guys. There's only a couple guys, the younger guys, that really understand the game at a fundamental level, that can understand coverage, understand how you're attacking it, the holes in the defense, where you should go with the ball pre-snap, where you're going post-snap. And that's why you got to bring back a 44-year-old Phillip Rivers, because the game, they're not teaching them anymore in college. They're like, hey, we'll send you your progression. You go 1, 2, 3 to these guys, but that's a story for a different day.
Cam, do you think he came back just for health insurance?
No, I don't know why he came back. You know, maybe he was at home and he talked. How many kids he has again? Like 10 or
he's
right?
got 10.
Something like that. Maybe he 10. Asked the kids, hey, guys, what do you think I should go out there? And they all were like, Dad, go ahead. Just, you know, take a chance. And maybe he just went out there to go do it for the kids or something. But to me, he looked good, man. He looked sharp. He looked efficient. He looked like himself. He's a quarterback I always thought got the ball out fast. He knows where he wants to go. He hits a lot of choice routes. I mean, he looks dynamic.
But when he hit that back shoulder on that final drive and you realize they're going to get a shot at a field goal, I mean, there had to have been part of you that was going, oh, no way.
You know, that's the part of the game that I actually missed because I was actually in the stadium right at time to beat the traffic.
So I wait a minute, last, you left?
I missed a little, yeah, I think it was the last two drives I missed because I was trying to beat the traffic out of the stadium. The term, know what I'm talking about, that traffic. Yeah,
I do.
Crazy up
I do.
Downtown.
I do. It save yourself 2 hours.
Yeah.
Oh, come on, dude. That's 15 yards for leaving the stadium early.
Hey, come on. You act like the refs that just threw a flag for everything. Come on, man.
Right. Where's your leniency? Come
on. I know. So where's your – forget, look, they won the game, and the Seahawks are one of the 2-3 best teams in the NFC, if not the NFL. I get all of that. Are you concerned, though, as we get ready? Sherm, you're getting ready for Thursday. Now you get a home game this week that they can't run the ball. They ran the ball 50 yards against the Colts, and that when you get to the playoffs, that might not be sustainable?
Yeah, that's been my concern the entire season. That's been my biggest concern. And I thought that's why they brought in Rashid Shaheed, but they haven't pushed the ball down the field with him. Like, you can't loosen that defense up if you're not going to willing to take shots. And I think they were uncomfortable taking shots against the Indianapolis Colts because they didn't trust the O-line versus their D-line. I thought they had some leakiness early on. So, but yeah, it's a big concern for me. And it's been a concern all season because it's not even good teams. Like, it's like, hey, these are good run defenses. You're going to struggle against them. It's bad run defenses you're struggling against, too. And at some point, it's gonna bite you.
I'm a Sam Darnold fan. I'm a big Sam Darnold fan. I just hope we're not seeing the same movie where because you can't run the football, then there's too much on his plate come January, come playoff time. And it's an early exit like Minnesota. I mean, it was the Rams that knocked him out last time, knocked the Vikings out with those 9 sacks in the wild card round a year ago. And then everyone's going, well, hey, Sam's going to have a great year, but come January, you know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. You would hate for that to be the case. I think this is a more sound and a better defense than he played with. No offense to Minnesota. Totally. I thought they played really good defense, but Flores is a feast or famine kind of deal. If he gets home and he gets there, then great. If not, you're getting gashed. But I think, you know, he'll have a chance. He'll have a chance. I can't tell you how it'll go either way. This Rams game, especially the second one, will be a big tale. If he can, you know, kind of conquer the demons of the Rams and conquer the pressure that they're going to bring with Chris Shula and what this defense has given him problems with in the past, then I think that'll go a long way to giving himself confidence and his teammates confidence and the fans confidence that he'll be able to change the narrative in the playoffs.
Cam, how does it change on Thursday now that Davante Adams isn't going to play?
You know what? To be honest with you, I haven't really been watching the games as much.
That's cool.
I can't even give you like a honest, detailed opinion on what I think. I've been kind of in this restaurant getting this thing right. So that's been like my main focus right now. The only team that I do watch, again, is the Seahawks. And kind of based on what Sherm was just saying, though, with Sam Darnold, I think that he's going to get a lot of chances due to the fact that the defense is strong. They do have a really strong defense. They're going to give him a whole lot of chances with turnovers and just stopping them, making the opponent team to punt and, you know, just give them chances to go out there and execute and make plays.
Cam, this one does feel like, though, tell me if I'm wrong, that this is the second, obviously, but it feels like these teams are inevitably going to play a third time, and this game on Thursday kind of might just determine where that third game, potentially the NFC Championship game, would be.
Yeah, I mean, history repeats itself. I mean, if you look at the history of us playing this team all the time, the Rams, man, it's always been a battle. And around this time of the year, you know, you got injuries, you know, guys are fatigued a little bit just due to injuries. But then you got guys that are excelling and playing at a higher level around this time as well. But these two teams, we always battle each other. Seahawks and Rams has always been a really tough battle, and it always came down to either, you know, a third game or whatnot.
Guys, the injuries on Sunday were ridiculous. Let's start with Micah. Sherm, can the Packers win now without him?
Can they win without him? It depends on who they're playing, is the honest answer. Are they as good of a team without him? No. And not only did they lose him, they lost Christian Watson.
Yeah.
And so you talk about a team losing arguably their two most dynamic players to injury at the most critical time of the year. So no, they're not as good. And they weren't as good in that game without him. Once they lost those two guys, the whole dynamic of the game changed. You saw that the Denver Broncos start playing them a lot differently, start bringing a lot more pressure, start bringing four and five man pressure or five and six man pressures. And on the other side, not that this pass rush isn't incredibly dynamic, but you take Micah Parsons and the attention he brings out of the dynamic, it's a pass rush that people can block.
Yeah, and Cam, you know that. It puts more pressure on you guys in the back end if no one's getting home. I mean, you guys can't cover for an hour.
Oh, yeah. Pressure up front is vital. You know, that's one thing about our defense is that our guys up front, they put the pressure on the quarterback to make him get the ball out fast. You know, it gave us the opportunity to sit on routes sometimes. It gave us the opportunity to take away those first routes that we knew were coming. And, you know, it helped us out on the back end. It all works hand in hand, the front end, the back end. You know, we need them to put pressure on them to give us opportunity, and we got to cover to give them opportunity to get to the quarterback.
Sherm, with the Chiefs, with Mahomes, I always used to call him like he's the ultimate deodorant, and like no matter what the rest of the roster looked like, no matter what the rest of the game plan looked like, he was the deodorant that could make it smell better. He always had a good team around him, don't get me wrong, but he's a magician, he's a sorcerer, whatever. He'd find a way out of it. He's human. We get all of that. What do the Chiefs need to do while he rehabs, roster-wise, in your eyes, like team-wise, conceptually? So when he gets back, it's not all on him.
That's a tough question because it's going to start with the quarterback, and that's where most teams start. I think they'll do a great job of retooling on defense. They always do a really good job of drafting guys that fit in Spagnuolo's system really well. You got to retool that offensive line. I don't know what's going on with Simmons, the tackle, but you know, you have to make sure that offensive line is healthy and strong. And I think a dynamic running back has to be in the fold. You have to get a more dynamic running back. And no offense to Hunt and Pacheco, but You need somebody. You know, I know that they were in the runnings for Breece Hall, but you need somebody like that. You need somebody that can really change the game in an instant. And I think that's what they're going to have to focus on this offseason is getting a dynamic running back, whether it's through the draft or through free agency, and attacking it that way, attacking it the old school way. Great defense, a run game, and controlling the clock.
You think they relied on him too much? Like, don't worry, Patrick will fix it.
Do I think they relied on him too much? No, not necessarily, because he hasn't been the greatest the last couple of years down the stretch. And their defense, they've been considered a defensive team for a couple of those Super Bowls. So not that he's not who he's been, but the strength of their team was the defense and Chris Jones and those guys standing up. When they played the San Francisco 49ers, that defense played a heck of a game. It wasn't like they scored 40 points. I think the ending score was maybe 19 to 22 or something like that. So it's not a high scoring game. So I think they obviously need to rely on him, and they have, because he's such an incredible and dynamic, one of the greatest players to play this game. But I think they've tried their best to build a good defense around him.
You see that thing yesterday where Chris Jones was on the podium. He did not realize that they had been eliminated.
Yeah, I did.
Can you imagine being in that position, Cam? Did you see that?
I didn't see it. Yeah.
So he's up on the podium. He's talking about whatever, how they were fighting during the game and how they were hanging in there and what they got to do now. And he was talking about the playoff math, and someone said, no, you're eliminated. Oh, and he went, he's on the podium. Oh, man. And he said, we're eliminated? He said, yeah. And he went, okay.
Oh, man. And that's, what is it, three more games left?
They got three more games. Yeah, I mean, they've never been in that situation.
Yeah, I guess it's a gut check. It's a reality check. And I guess, you know, that's one of those things where it makes you think like, hey, I got to go put the work back in again. You know, I got to collect my, you know, get the team back together. And if, you know, if he's one of those type of leaders, he'll rally the team up and you know, try to make a push for it next year again. But also finishing strong this season, you know, to build on the finishing part of this year. And then, you know, like you're saying, you're missing your quarterback, though, the key component. I always thought that you should not put everything on just the quarterback because of situations like this. You know, once you lose that quarterback, then everything kind of folds. And I feel like that was one thing that we saw when we played the Denver Broncos in the Super Bowl. You know, all the energy was on the quarterback. We're like, oh, okay, you're telling us who to take out now. All right, we take out the quarterback. D-line put the pressure on them. Ball game. So, you know, I think you shouldn't just – you got to have a full team, full roster of great individuals and everybody contributing, which they do have a good team, but you can't put all the focus on one guy.
And you knew once that ball went over his head, it was over, right?
Like, well,
once it went over Peyton's head.
No, I actually knew when we were practicing.
Right, we knew before that.
It was way before that. We was practicing. We saw the film and, you know, saw how basic, we were a basic defense also, but we also saw a basic offense, but we just knew that we had a better personnel.
I always have fun with both of you guys here. The Legion of Boom Sports Bar, by the way, go check it out. That's where you are right now in Bellevue. And Sherm, always good to see you and your amazing crew. Say hi to everybody. Home game for TNF Seahawks and the Rams coming up this week on Prime Video. Gentlemen, appreciate it. Best of luck the rest of the season for you both.
Thank you very much.
So the Packers now 9-4-1. They go to Chicago this week. That is a Saturday night game. Then home for Baltimore and then at Minnesota week 18. Jory Epstein, Frank Schwab back with me after talking to Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor there. Wisconsin Bureau checking in again. Frank, they're not a Super Bowl team anymore, right? I mean, we dipped our toe in this pool a little bit yesterday. You're with me on that?
The only reason I would say maybe is because I don't think there's any great team. I don't think we're going to get some kind of random matchup and a random champion this year, I believe. And maybe it's the Packers who overcome this, but obviously their chances go way down. They go from maybe 25% to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl to like 10. Like, I'm just throwing numbers out randomly, but you get the point. Like they take a major step back. If it was just Micah, if you just lose Micah, it's a huge loss, obviously. He's the biggest difference maker they have. Back in the offseason, after last season ended, Brian Gutekunst, their general manager, came out and said, we need more urgency. We need to start chasing championships. And I think that was an admission that we all could see, that the Packers were a very good football team that was not great. And they needed something to take them to the next level. What it was Micah Parsons. He actually made that kind of a difference for them in some of these games. And now he's not there anymore. And you just become very good again. And maybe that's good enough to make a run, but I doubt it. And now you look at the other, if it was just Micah Parsons, okay, but it's Tucker Kraft, it's Elgin Jenkins, it's Devontae Wyatt. Like they've lost a lot of guys. And I just don't know how they overcome that to make a Super Bowl other than, hey, it's anybody's ball game in the NFL this year. I don't see the Packers being a Super Bowl quality team anymore.
Yeah, Rashawn Gary's response after the game was really telling when he's asked about Micah Parsons. And I mean, his shoulders literally fall and he's just sighing and pausing because he's so disappointed, because what Micah Parsons did was elevating everyone around him. I mean, in this game that he goes out, tears his ACL, the Packers defense for the first time this year gives up 4 passing touchdowns. The Packers defense for the first time allows a passer rating from the opposing quarterback of 134.7. So this game became their worst metrics on several fronts. And I don't expect those numbers in particular to carry over week to week. I think part of that was not having Micah and the attention he commanded, which was often double and triple coverage. coverage, but part of it's also just the emotional letdown, the psychological impact of losing one of your best players and knowing, hey, we probably were going to have trouble getting there without Tucker Kraft, but without Tucker Kraft and Micah Parsons, among other guys like Devontae Wyatt, you really are in a tough place. And when I reach out to people around the league, so I'm working on a story about, hey, how do you as a team prepare for the Packers differently without Micah Parsons? Everyone I'm talking to is saying, yeah, we would. And I talked to coaches who have played against Micah Parsons this year, and they tell me, well, we were running the ball more than we usually would because we knew that if we got in too many passing situations, not only would Micah have an impact, but also he would be fresh. So we needed to wear him down as a pass rusher. We had a third down plan for him. I mean, some teams were saying like we were not planning, or at least not banking on any deep routes because we didn't expect to have that kind of time for the routes to develop. And so when you now as an opponent are no longer planning for those game plan elements because Micah Parsons is not there, it's not going to be as difficult to beat the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, and the list on your screen there, if you're watching this show on yahoosports.tv, let's say, for example, or the Yahoo Sports YouTube page, wherever. First of all, tip of the cap to Wicks Season. Can't tell who you're a fan of. The list of injuries, I mean, it's long and spectacular. Tucker Kraft, Elgton Jenkins, Zach Thompson, two O-linemen there. The Devontae Wyatt injury is huge as well on that defensive line. What we talked about when they got Micah was that he's a force multiplier. The Packers have, Ryan Gutekunst has, the last couple of years, drafted all these athletes for the front seven. And many of them have had their moments. But when you add Micah Parsons into the mix, he makes all of them that much better. Adrian Cooper, another name, for example. He was that guy that always demanded attention, Jory, as you said. And when you double-team him and you free up everyone else, all of those guys talented with one-on-ones, those guys will eat. The emotional toll, I can't even begin to imagine, because they now have to up their emotional game again for the Bears this week. Again, this time it's at Soldier Field. It's a short week. It's a Saturday evening game. It's obviously going to be cold. It would have been cold in Green Bay. It was cold last time they faced each other. But, you know, the league, and I think it's five teams have two division games against the same opponent in 3 weeks. I have to look that up, but I think that's what I saw earlier today. So, like, Bears-Packers twice in 3 weeks. When you play a division rival and a hated division rival, a high emotion, high leverage game twice in 3 weeks, and now you do it coming off the emotional toll of an injury to your most important defensive player, most expensive player on your roster, period, and a road loss, man, I cannot even begin to imagine. Coming up next, where do the Packers land in Frank Schwab's week 15 into week 16 playoff projection? Does he think this sinks them out of the NFC top seven? If you listen to Frank, you would say probably no. But what about the Bears? Is Frank a Bear Lever? That wasn't funny. I tried. That's coming up next, regardless, on Inside Coverage. So there was this movie a while ago, and I don't remember the movie, but I'm not going to ask Jory what the movie was. But there was a line, that was something like, Frank, you don't mess with tradition. Do you remember the movie? No?
Wasn't Rudy. I know that.
No, it wasn't Rudy. I haven't seen
it. You wouldn't
Rudy.
Have known it. Yeah.
Hold on. I'm going to Google this real quick. Stay there. I'm leaning into the camera. Movie line, you don't
mess. This is a great
mess.
Start after all the puns.
Mess with traditions. Here it is. Adam's Family Values. Is it Adam's Family line?
Wow. We have right? an Adam's Family Values drop on the show today. Did okay. not have that.
But
on
I think
my
they did
card.
It in the original Adam's Family. Either way, the tradition is, and now I'll finally explain where I'm going and how my convoluted brain works, is that we've been doing on Tuesday now for weeks, months, Frank's playoff projections. You don't mess with tradition is my point. Just wasted a minute of your projection time, Frank, by trying to, you know, figure out what the hell I'm talking about. So we're going to do it again. Are you ready, Frank? Your guaranteed playoff projections. Yes. Yes. Okay.
Yes,
put them on the screen, Madison. Here we go.
Or Andrew's money back. Yes. Yes.
Or Andrew's money back. We're going to go from the bottom up to the top. The Chargers, Frank has checking in as the 7th seed. The Jaguars at 6. The Bills at 5. The Steelers win the AFC North at 4. The Texans at 3. And then looky, looky, looky. I believe we have movement from a week ago. We have a flip-flop here at the top. We have the Patriots now at 2. The Broncos at 1. Jory Epstein, the floor is yours.
Frank, you left the Bills at 5, just switched up 1 and 2 from last week. But I want to know, if I had to tell you right now, you could either take the Bills representing the AFC in the Super Bowl or any of the teams currently atop their division in your rankings. Who would you go for?
Bills are the
easily the any of the teams at the top of their division, because I think the Bills are flawed. I really do. And I get, look, anybody picking the Bills to make a Super Bowl, I get it. I've seen that guy play. I've watched him every week. I'm impressed. He's the best player in the world right now as we sit here. But they're so flawed otherwise. Their defense is not good. James Cook is a good player, but they don't have a lot around Josh Allen. It is just hand Josh Allen the ball every week and say, bail us out, Josh. And I don't know that that's a great formula for 3 straight playoff games, whereas I really like the Broncos. I think they're very, very underrated. We've seen the Patriots beat the Bills already this season. We saw the Texans destroy the Bills this season, and it wasn't that long ago. It was 3 weeks ago. That defense is nasty. So, and the Steelers ain't going anywhere. But any of those top three, yeah, give me those three. That group of three, I think, has a better chance than the Bills to make the Super Bowl this year.
It's funny. I would actually go Bills because I think this is the year that a Hero Bowl can win. Lamar likely not there. We know Mahomes is out. Joe Burrow is out, and maybe. Maybe this is recency bias after watching what Josh Allen has done in each of the last 2 weeks with the rally against the Bengals and the rally against the Patriots last week that Jory was at. I do believe that this is the year he can get away with Hero Ball, even though I know I just
rallies.
Said their roster.
That's my problem. They need a rally every week. They need to be like, we're going to lose to the Bengals at home. Save us. That's not good.
Their roster is a disaster. Here's my issue. They're going to have to do it in all likelihood with 3 road games. And I don't know that he could do it 3 times. If this were a 2 road game or a 2, if they were at home and you're telling me that Josh Allen has to play Hero Ball for 2 games at home, I would say I'm going to bet on him. I mean, for recreational purposes only, past performance not indicative of future gains, and I am legally forbidden from betting. You get my point. 3 on the road is tough. There's something, though, about this story that is forming that I think is believable. I think it would be amazing for the Rust Belt. I don't like that term, but you know what I'm talking about. For the Bills, as they're moving out of their stadium to finally get their championship. Also, the idea that looking at their schedule, they may only have 2 home games left in that building if they don't get a home game in the postseason. Wrap your head around that. No one envisioned the Bills closing this building without a playoff appearance in that building, but they might actually have to do it. All right, let's get to the NFC. Frank's NFC playoff projections heading into week 16. Frank has, as the number 7 seed, the Chicago Bears. He evidently still believes in them enough. That was the same spot where he had them a week ago. He has, if you look ahead, the Packers up at 3, so I'm assuming that means he thinks Green Bay wins this week in Chicago. He has the 49ers at 6, the Rams at 5. Last week, Frank had the Rams at number 1, so I'm assuming that means Frank has the Rams losing in Seattle this week because he has them up at 1, the Eagles at 2, the Packers at 3, the Bucks at 4. Jory Epstein, the floor is yours.
Yeah, so Frank, as you move the Seahawks to the top place and send the Rams down to 5th in the playoff projections, I'm curious, do you actually believe the Seahawks are the best team, or do you just think that their schedule plays out? Because they've got the Rams, Panthers, and Niners, none of which are cakewalks. And when I look at this, I mean, They almost lost to a 44-year-old quarterback who signed like 3 days ago.
I do get that. With the Colts game, I just look at that as they overlook the Colts because everybody had been writing them off, and they probably said, Phil Rivers ain't coming off the couch and beating us. Come on. And then they were looking ahead to the Rams this week. This is Super Bowl 59.5. Or I don't even know what number we're up to at Super Bowls, but go with me. You know what I mean? This is
going to be Super Bowl 60 in Santa Clara. Yeah.
There you go. So 60.5 or 59.5, I guess, whatever. You, sure. Andrew, you said it before, this is the best Thursday night game of the season. I'll one up that and say this is the best game of the season. This is the best game on the entire regular season schedule. I can't wait for it. And having been to Seattle many times for games, you guys have too, that place is really intimidating. I thought the Seattle Seahawks did not get completely outplayed in the meeting at LA. Just Sam Darnold made some big mistakes, and they still were a Jason Myers field goal away from winning that game. I think the Seahawks win. But I did have the thought of, okay, even if I think the Seahawks win, like you said, Jory, their schedule the rest of the way is a lot tougher than the Rams' schedule. Could they trip up against the 49ers? Could they even trip up at Carolina, coming off the emotional high of maybe beating the Rams in this scenario? Yeah, you could. So I thought about keeping the Rams number one, but I just think at the end of the day, I said in my head as I'm doing this projection every week, I said, if we get to this, you know, this spot in week 16 and they're still neck and neck going into that Thursday night game, I think Seattle wins that game. So I'm going to put Seattle number one into projections. That's kind of how it's played out, and I'm going to stick to that. I do think Seattle ends up running the table here and gets a number one seed.
And as I said to Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor, this game, for me, will determine where they meet again. They're going to meet a third time. It's likely in the NFC Championship game. Where will that game be held? And if the Seahawks win, that game is going to be held in Seattle. If the Rams win, that game is going to be held at SoFi, where the Rams beat it the first time. The caveat that I want to push back on, Frank, is when you say, oh, well, the Seahawks played really well in L.A. when they lost to the Rams. They just, you know, didn't get a good game from Sam Darnold. Isn't that significant? Like, why are you brushing that off?
It is. I guess I have enough faith in Sam Darnold. By the way, who hasn't played great lately? I do have to say that. Maybe we're seeing a late season slump from him. But
they I can't run the ball.
I do look at that as more of a one-off, that this is just Sam Darnold. He's going to, every single time he faces a big game, he's going to be terrible. I hate that narrative.
Or the Rams.
So I'm kind of sticking in Sam's corner here. And I get that Chris Shula has had his number. There's no question about that. He has really dialed up stuff against him. And you're right. They cannot run the ball. They're not a great running team. They are very, very good defense. And even with all the, if Sam Darnold throws three interceptions in that first Rams game, they're going to win. Like, he needed to have a total meltdown to lose that one. I don't think that happens again. I can't envision Sam. Oh, I guess I can envision it because I've seen it, but I don't believe that Sam Darnold's going to have some four interception game again at home against the Rams this Thursday.
I'm not going to predict Sam to have that meltdown because he's an easy storyline to root for and to hope succeeds. But Frank, you do have to recognize that you're like, this is the year that Hero Ball is going to win it, Josh Allen. But it is okay if the Seahawks don't have a quarterback we can rely on. Like, how do we put those things together? These seem a little bit in contrast.
Because, Jory, this is the most wide-open, weird NFL season I've seen. As I've said before, I think I've said on this show, I've said it on other shows, I guess, when we get to the 14, if the Ravens take the Steelers down for the AFC North, and as long as the Buccaneers get in the playoffs, I think you can make a case for any one of the 14 teams making a Super Bowl, and I've never experienced that in my life, where you can, every year we get to the playoffs, we're like, whatever, this team that's playing on Saturday afternoon, the Texans, they're not going to a Super Bowl. Good for them to make it, but there's no chance in the world they're making a Super Bowl. This year, with that playoff field, I think anybody can make it. I really, truly do. I think we're going to have weird champions in each conference. I think we're going to have a weird champion over, like the Jaguars or somebody are going to win this year. It's just going to be batty. So I just don't think normal rules apply because I don't think there's a lot of elite quarterbacks in the NFL, in the NFL playoff schedule this year, because there's no Mahomes. There's not going to be any Burrow. We've gotten rid of some of the guys who you really think, okay, that guy's just going to take over. And Josh Allen's one guy, and I think his entire team around him is flawed. So I just think it's going to be random this year. I think it's total Plinko. I think we're just going to see teams at the end where we're like, we got Jaguars, Buccaneers in a Super Bowl. Something like that. It's something wacky is going to happen. Mark this down. I'm going to say we are not going to have a chalky Super Bowl. We're going to have something weird and wild and pretty much fun.
Jaguars, Bucks would be Florida. Yeah, obviously. But that would just be bonkers. Whatever.
Yeah, like Chargers, Bears.
I mean, think about it. Jaguars... Yeah. The Jaguars were a two-point conversion throw by Geno Smith away from losing in Vegas. And remember, the Raiders beat the Patriots week one. Like, there's a world there's a multiverse level here where the Raiders beat two AFC division champions. And yet we're talking those two teams could both be, one of them could be from the AFC in the postseason. One last thing here on your rankings here, Frank, the Buccaneers, and right now the Buccaneers do on a tiebreaker lead the NFC South over the Panthers, but they are both 7-7 and they play twice in the last 3 weeks. You have no faith, or actually I'd phrase it differently. After watching the Bucs last Thursday, you have faith in the Bucs?
This is a lot schedule-based because the way it breaks down, the Buccaneers basically win the tiebreaker if they don't get swept by the Panthers, which means the Buccaneers just have to win two of their last three games. And if you look at their remaining schedule, it's really not that tough. I do think that at least they split against the Panthers. I believe their other game is at the Saints, maybe. It's a game they should win.
Anyway, I forgot Bucs what it play was. At Miami in between, Miami, that's what and it is. The Panthers Zach play Wilson. Seattle at home.
Exactly. So the Buccaneers, the way the math works, if the Buccaneers go 2-1 the rest of the way, they win that division. I think that gives them a big edge. That loss by the Panthers on Sunday at the Saints, when they're playing a team, the Saints are 2-10 against the rest of the NFL, 2-0 against the Panthers this year. They're up 17-7. Them not closing the door there, I think, changed the entire NFC South race, because now they're just, the Panthers need to somehow sweep the Buccaneers, and I don't think that's going to happen.
As a Browns fan, I loved it. So there's that. All right, time for one more thing before we go. Jory, you're going first.
Absolutely. After seeing what Philip Rivers did this week and seeing the joys of an unretiree, I think we need to make sure we are also celebrating unretiree in Darren Waller, who came back to the league this season after taking 2024 off and had not scored in 2 months and then had two touchdowns Monday night against the Steelers. I recognize it was garbage time, but hey, when it was fourth quarter, Philip Rivers couldn't finish it. So the unretirees did have a little bit of redemption in the fourth quarter.
I like very, the very name cool story, unretirees. Yeah. I like that. And yeah, Darren Waller, movie if he had been in my fantasy lineup, other than Chuba Hubbard in the flex, could have won fantasy. No one cares about my fantasy team, however, including Frank. Frank, you're one more thing.
But unretirees could be a movie title, and neither of you would watch it because you don't watch sports movies, and Jory doesn't watch movies, period. But I'd watch it.
If it's got a good cast, I'd watch it. It doesn't have to be a sports movie either. It could be like people coming back to the workforce.
It's going to be the movie of the 2025 Colts.
There you go.
When they win the Super Bowl.
Anything can happen. We just talked about it. My one last thing, we kind of overlooked a story because if the Cowboys are involved in a game, we never pay attention to anything else going on. But I want to give a shout out to J.J. McCarthy, because through 6 weeks, which is really, really dumb to bury a guy, I did it. It's almost a mea culpa. I'm just giving an apology almost to J.J. McCarthy to say, hey, kid, you went out and played two pretty good games. And he was really good against the Cowboys. I'm not saying he's perfect by any means. Missed some throws. He needs to learn some things, touch on the ball. Maybe slow it down. You don't need to throw 98 miles an hour to Justin Jefferson in the end zone. Those might be completed. But overall, he has looked so much better his last two games. And I personally am taking a step back to say, yes, I'm going to keep this in mind. Don't bury a guy after six games, no matter how bad he looks. I always rail against the microwave attitude about quarterback development in the NFL, where we need it now, now, now. We need a guy to be great right away, or he's thrown on a scrap heap, and the Vikings got to do something different because J.J. McCarthy can't play. It was six games. That's it. He's looked really good in the last two, and I think he's handled all the criticism well. I think he's handled all the heat well. You know, the alter ego stuff is goofy, but him, like, even like him doing the gritty into the end zone the other day after Kevin O'Connell said, don't do the gritty going into the end zone, and J.J.'s feeling himself a little bit. He's like, whatever. I'll ask for forgiveness later. I thought that was cool, and I just like the story of J.J. McCarthy kind of overcoming all of the criticism he got for a few weeks from people like me and playing really well the last couple of weeks. So let's see where this goes. We might get to the end of the season and say, you know what? We were really premature to bury J.J. McCarthy. He's not as bad as we thought.
Tip of the cap to you, Frank. You have buried a lot of guys this year. I am glad that you got the shovel out to dig J.J. McCarthy, myself, to exhume him from the grave that you dug for him just a few weeks ago. My one more thing, Myles Garrett is now one sack away from the NFL's single-season record. He has 21.5 after 1.5 of Caleb Williams at Soldier Field on Sunday. So he is one away from tying the all-time record by television host Michael Strahan and Steeler T.J. Watt. What do you know? CBS is sending J.J. Watt along with Ian Eagle and Evan Washburn down to the sideline to call this game on Sunday. So J.J. will be there when Miles breaks the record and Steeler fans break the internet, somehow comparing and complaining that Miles' record shouldn't count, because I know that's what they will do, saying that the Steelers did this and that, and they made the playoffs when TJ, TJ did it in 15 games. This is Miles' 15th game, and he will do it in approximately 120 fewer opponent passing attempts than TJ Watt. Wrap your head around that. I'll get the number right for you tomorrow, but approximately 100 to 120 fewer opponent passing attempts. So there's that. I love the Steelers. I really do. And don't, you know, ever think that any of the snark that I might throw in their general direction or complaints about any of the calls that they do or don't get, you know, or Patrick Queen, you know, tackling Tua around the helmet yesterday and not getting flagged, or Sante Samuel going low. He only just got there on the knee and almost permanently maiming Darren Waller, not getting flagged for that. I don't point that out. I'm just here to watch the game as an impartial observer. You guys are making faces and I love you both. So for Jory Epstein and Frank Schwab, go ahead. You want to add anything? Go ahead.
Just for Andrew Siciliano, don't speak on our behalves.
I just want to say that since Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre's career have mirrored each other, I just want Aaron Rodgers to change the play and dive right into Myles Garrett for the record-breaking sack like he did for Michael Strahan so many years ago. I think that would be apropos. Can we get that? Can we get Aaron Rodgers as being like, you want a gift, buddy? I'll give one to you, just like my boy Brett did for Michael.
Well, there is another way to look at this thing, too. And look, TJ, or Jay, okay, my T's and J's. TJ did get the record in 15 games. Now, he got it in week 17 for the Steelers, or 18, whatever. He did it in 15 games, in the final game of the season. But he had like over 100, you know, more snaps. If Myles Garrett doesn't get it this week, next week they play the Steelers. Myles has never sacked Aaron Rodgers, Frank, and he has spoken openly about it.
The graveyard.
All year. Jory was there.
Yep.
Jory was there, right? In Cleveland and Berea that day.
Yeah, and I didn't know about his quarterback graveyard, and I was like, what are we talking about? I didn't know it was a Halloween.
And I pulled my phone out. I'm like, no, Jory, look, he does this thing at his house every year. Look, he has... Anyway. So he's never sacked him. If it doesn't happen this week, to get it against the Steelers with TJ in the house and never having sacked Aaron Rodgers. But if that's the case, there's no way Aaron's going to get sacked. He will take a three-step drop and throw it into the stands every time if he has to, which is what he did week 6 when the Browns faced the Steelers in Pittsburgh. I mean, he was like, first read, not there. I'm throwing it away every time. He didn't want to get sacked. I digress.
For okay, Jory Epstein and Frank Schwab, coming up tomorrow. He is Andrew Siciliano.
Yes, guys. Yes. You guys know how I feel about the Steelers. I've now lost my IFB, so if you're going to say anything, I can't hear it. It doesn't matter. For those two, Amon-Ra St. Brown is coming up on Wednesday's show. I'm Andrew Siciliano.